Hi, I'm Niv.
Hi, I'm Martin.
And we are Asteroids in Exile.
Everything they've built will fall!
You want to do the introduction today?
Hello and welcome to another episode of Asteroids in Exile.
Woohoo!
We're back again after a longer hiatus than usual.
Has it been longer?
I think we're 1 or 2 weeks over.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
We got to watch
people down.
We got to watch that schedule.
Yeah. We're sorry.
Our humblest apologies.
And our big thing today.
Yeah, what are we going to talk about?
The movie, X-Men, Age of Apocalypse.
Well, we're finally going to get to do a review, and I'm sure people are wondering, was it good? Was it bad? How was it? What do you think? I don't know.
Yeah. And we're not sure if we can give you a definitive answer, because, you know, it's an age and not the day of apocalypse, or the hour of apocalypse.
It goes on for a while, and happens, we're not quite sure.
You could take, yeah. And that was our review.
Yeah, pretty much. So we're gonna talk about Age of Apocalypse. Talk about some comics.
Yeah.
I also saw the movie Independence Day, Independence Day Resurgence. Did you watch that?
No.
No. Oh, it's fine. That's good.
Shout out to the Austrian designers who made the spaceships.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I heard about it yesterday. And nice. The nation is pretty proud of them.
We designed the spaceships that destroyed the world. And then we got some new sort of, just kind of quick review about what the upcoming movies are as well. So we got Suicide Squad, Jason Bourne, Star Trek. Did we talk about Rogue One last time? Because we're doing all the reshoots and
we
stuff.
We talked about the trailer.
Just the trailer, okay. So, just some thoughts on what's going on with the Star Wars universe. Warcraft? Did you watch Warcraft?
No.
No, okay. No, it's fine. I mean, again, I have a weakness for watching bad movies. So, we'll go through Warcraft real quickly.
Okay. Quicker than that.
And then on the TV front, what have you been watching?
I've only watched the latest Voltron remake. The Voltron remake.
The Voltron remake. Voltron. All right, remake. Cool. Yeah, I've heard some good things about that, so it'll be interesting to see what you have to say.
It's awesome.
That's right. Sneak peek. Top line summary. It's awesome.
It cost me a day of my life. Seriously? And I don't regret it.
Awesome. All right, so let's start at the top then. So, Age of Apocalypse. What you think?
Well, I think my opinion about the movie is better than the general opinion because I thought it to be really entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has a lot of flaws.
Yeah, for sure.
But I don't get why some people call it a failure or rank it behind Days of Future Past. Because I think they complement each other rather well.
Yeah. The thing with Age of Apocalypse for me was, you know, it was so close to the 90s cartoon and the X-Men that we know and love. From the 90s cartoon with, like, all the bright, colorful costumes and just over-the-top action sequences and stuff. That part was really cool. Like, I heard somebody say that, you know, if somebody told my 11-year-old... me, that you're going to get an X-Men movie and it's going to have, like, they're all going to be, you know, Psylocke's going to be wearing the Psylocke costume and, you know, it's, you know, they're going to have the fight with Apocalypse and Apocalypse is going to look like that and stuff like that. You would have been like, awesome, that's exactly what I want.
Sign me up.
But then when you grow up and you kind of actually see it all happen, you're like, okay, it's a little bit too cartoony, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what it was for me. Like, it was great in the sense that I got to see all the stuff from the X-Men that I wanted to see. But it had a level of, like, unbelievability as a grown-up that I just couldn't get over. Like, I didn't understand what the motivations were for the Four Horsemen. Like, why were they with Apocalypse? You know, it felt a little bit like he was like, hey, I'm going to give you a new haircut and new clothes. Join my gang. You know, like, that's pretty much what he gave them, you know? If they went over, like, some sort of, like, mind control, or if they talked about something like that,
at least something
it would have made
like
sense.
That, yeah. I have a note that says, I'm getting a face tattoo. In the scene where Xavier contacts Magneto telepathically, and Magneto goes away from the group, and he turns around and looks if anybody noticed him leaving, and Apocalypse is giving Archangel the face paint in that moment. And I thought the next line of dialogue would be, Xavier asking him, hey, Eric, where are you? Is everything all right? And he goes like, I'm getting a face tattoo. Leave me alone, Dad.
Busy now, getting a facial tattoo. Yeah. That scene was in itself just so strange to see Apocalypse, like, bestowing the facial tattoo on Archangel, but it was meaningless for, like, what was actually going on there. Like, was he literally just giving them a new haircut and clothing? Like, you know?
Yeah.
It would have been better, I think, or funnier at least, if he actually had, like, clippers and he was actually shaving his head and giving him the mohawk. Because he gave both Angel and Storm got mohawks out of the deal. You know?
Yep.
It's like, it's our official haircut. Team Apocalypse.
And Psylocke got a costume because the look as an enforcer that she had in that bar, that looked great. She had the full window and actual trousers. And she got the costume. It was a bit strange.
And for me, that was the biggest thing that was missing from the movie, is that I think the story aspect was just completely, I don't know, it felt like it was completely overlooked. Like, they took the Apocalypse story, they said, all right, we've got to have the Four Horsemen. But they didn't sort of tie together the why of the whole thing. And so that kind of fell flat for me. But the other things, like the way they showed just that last fight scene with the Phoenix, when Jean sort of becomes the Phoenix and, like, steps out into the air, as she just walked forward slowly, like, that was so cool. Like, I want to see more of that in the next movie, hopefully. And I want to see a Dark Phoenix storyline coming out of this, like, done properly.
I guess that's the next thing we'll get.
Which you say, you kind of have a scared look in your face.
Yeah, it's because when you think of all the big X-Men stories that I know of, the next one would be Dark Phoenix.
Yeah.
But wouldn't we have to bring the guy from First Class back, Sebastian Shaw, played by the Invisible Man?
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon, thank you.
Yeah. Well, you could use Sebastian Shaw, but, I mean, there's enough characters in the whole universe now, just the X-Universe.
Yeah.
You could, because what I would really like is if they brought Emma Frost back, because January Jones...
Yes.
I mean, she didn't really leave a massive dent with that role, but if you do Emma Frost properly, you know, use her as the White Queen, playing that whole thing with you know, her role with the Dark Phoenix. But again, you couldn't do the whole Dark Phoenix storyline as it was in the comics, because you'd also need to introduce the Shi'ar as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you'd have, like, God, a massive alien race... and a whole different alien civilization.
Perhaps they bring the baseball movie next. 2 hours of them playing baseball and sorting out everything that happens in between. And at the end, the Shi'ar land and say, we have to take her in because she's dangerous. And then we go directly into the Dark Phoenix thing 2 years later, 3 years later.
They could do like an Angels in the Outfield storyline and the Angels turn out to be the Shi'ar. I love
it.
Yeah. No, I really like that part, even when the cartoon did it in the 90s. Did they actually... I don't know whether I'm remembering, like, the actual comic and it's just animated in my head, or whether it's actually happened in the animated series. But when the Shi'ar show up, like, it was just so cool.
Yeah. The design of the Shi'ar is awesome with the head, the helmets and stuff, and the longer figures, the slender...
The
slender
characters...
Builds.
Yeah, the characters like Gladiator and...
Gladiator,
Lilandra and her little risque love affair with Charles Xavier. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there. That's why that makes the X-Men so interesting. It's like a soap opera.
Yeah, that's a great thing about them, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm missing from those movies to a certain degree, the soap opera. Too many characters and not enough meaningful interactions between them. Except Scott and Jean, but that was...
Yeah. So, what did you think of Jean Grey, actually?
You know, I'm Sansa Stark. I mean, she is a beautiful woman. No doubt about it. But she has a very big forehead.
Really?
I'm always afraid that in the next scene her hair is gonna fall out.
Her hair was pulled back very tightly, I've got to say.
Like, and it's put me off in Game of Thrones as well.
Right.
Because I was always... It sounds stupid. It just bothered me. And during the whole... You know, I just looked at her hairline through the movie. I didn't see any facial expression, except for the end when she has the Phoenix
moment. When she went Phoenix. I think... I mean, that... So something similar to that is what sort of annoyed me as well, is Jean Grey looked so similar to Sansa Stark. Like they said, they had the same haircut, right?
Yeah.
One of the easy things they could have done was give Jean Grey a different hairstyle. Because in the comics, like her hair's like huge. It's this big red, huge, not mess, but you know, she's got a bit of a mane. They could have given the character in the, like the way they did the makeup and hair in the movie, more kind of a different look to what Sansa Stark has, because all I saw when I watched it was Sansa Stark trying to be Jean Grey, and that did kind of put me off. I'm like, you know, where's Ramsay Bolton going to show up kind of thing, you know? I think she did an all right job. I mean, I don't think she had the best lines in the show. Like, all of the characters were kind of written very, very two-dimensionally.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah,
lesser characters, more interaction. That would have been great, but all these fan service appearances.
Yeah, like Jubilee was wasted as well. Like they went through this whole hype and hoopla about having Jubilee in the movie and what her powers were going to be like and stuff, and then she did nothing except go to the mall.
Yeah,
her only role in there was just to go to the mall, you know. And I think they watched what, Empire Strikes Back or something? I can't remember.
Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi.
Say, third one is the worst one.
Oh, that's right,
or something like that.
Yeah, that's for sure. So it was good to see the characters, but yeah, you're right. It was just fan service. I would rather they would have had just background characters and other kids in the school, but focused a bit more on the ones that they were trying to talk about. Like Cyclops, you know, I didn't get a feel for like what that character was going through or what he was like. It felt very much like the whole James Marsden debacle all over again, where Cyclops was just, you know, wasted. And you really didn't get a sense of, he was just annoying, you know, because he was just there trying to be like a Boy Scout all the time.
Yeah. He should have been in the back introduced through the whole school scene.
Mm-hmm.
Then brought into the academy and then stayed in the background, not with too many lines. Oh, but he's Havok's brother, so
yeah,
there should have been a few lines.
Well, you know, there was no emotional weight, I think. Well, there was very little emotional weight to those stories. Like the whole thing, I think he was being bullied and stuff like that in school, right?
Yeah.
I didn't feel that was strong enough for like a character introduction, because for the rest of the movie, like, he didn't really have an obstacle to overcome. He just kind of played a victim, to me, is what it felt like. You know, he really didn't have a challenge that he was trying to overcome through the course of the movie, which is what would have given him a bit of a character arc.
But there was so much else, like Storm's Storm's change of mind, then the whole Quicksilver thing that went nowhere.
The Quicksilver, Quicksilver, I think, again, was just an excuse to give us an action set piece.
Yeah.
But to me, though, like, Quicksilver and... I can't remember the name of the actor who plays him, but that was, like, the most enjoyable parts of the movie for me. I think that actor brought a lot of fun and energy into the movie, which was missing for... A lot of the other characters were very angsty, very kind of heavy, whereas Quicksilver felt a bit light on. So that was good. I mean, he brought a lightness and levity to the movie.
To the movie,
And then, like, Nightcrawler was interesting. Angel was interesting, but I wanted to see a whole lot more coming out of that and understand who those characters were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole thing that Angel suddenly is a cage fighter and is seemingly enjoying it.
Yeah.
And just... listens to Metallica.
Yeah.
What's up with that? In some warehouse?
Wasn't he just in a random German warehouse or something? Yeah. Like, that's where all that was happening. Yeah, it was a little bit too, like... Again, it was too... It didn't make sense with, like, what the why. I don't know. They also, again, like, neglected the whole story that Angel goes through in terms of losing his wings and getting turned... Like, that was one of the cool parts of the Age of Apocalypse storyline. It wasn't actually the Age of Apocalypse storyline, but it was Angel's storyline for how he becomes the Archangel of Death, right?
Yeah.
And the Horseman of Apocalypse. Is that he loses his wings and goes through this, you know, all this horrible torture and just this horrible trauma. And then that's partly what Apocalypse gives him back in turning him into a horseman, is by him getting his wings back as the metal wings. And that was missed, you know, I think, sorely. He just got his wings damaged and then they were like, hey, join our team, we'll give you a haircut. That's what it felt like. And just going back to what you were saying about Storm as well, like, why did she change teams? Like, her motivation through the whole thing, she was fine to, like, watch the world burn for a while, you know, watch Apocalypse destroy, like, everything. Yeah. And then it's only when she saw Mystique, you know, on the other side of the, like, on the other team, when she's like, oh, maybe I'm on the wrong team. I'm like, what kind of morality do you have, girl, that you can watch everything get destroyed and all these people die and be like, yeah, you know what, it's okay, but Mystique, that's my line. You know, that's the line I'm looking across. I don't know, it was a bit weird. And then at the end of the movie, she was like, I'm going to join the school now. And it's like, I was a bad guy half an hour ago, you know?
Yeah, they should have gotten another character. But then how would you have gotten Storm into the movie?
Well,
because the thing with Apocalypse was great, that he say that she takes him in. There was a neat twist, so to say.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think you still could have done the thing where Storm takes him in out of, like, being a nice person because she's, like, trying to help him out. But then he betrays her. And this way, I think a simple trope like mind control would have worked really well to just explain that part. Because, you know, she does a nice thing by taking him in, but he then takes advantage of her by putting her under mind control.
Yeah.
And then she remains under mind control, but she's able to fight it back when she sees Mystique being on the other side, because she realizes that that's her hero kind of thing. And that's how she breaks out of the mind control. And if they had just done that mind control thing, everyone would have accepted it, because we're all so familiar with mind control and how it works.
You know?
And then it would have taken that whole thing around the motivation of the characters for why they joined Apocalypse would have been easy.
Yeah, easy to explain.
They could have maybe avoided that with Magneto, like maybe he just joins out of his own accord. But with Psylocke, Angel, and and Storm, it would have been great to have just been like a mind control thing.
And because you mentioned Magneto, I think he was totally wasted in the role as a henchman. And at the end, because... And I don't get why they had... Okay, spoilers. And I don't get why they had to kill his family.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't he just grab his folk and be on the run? And get, accept a deal from Apocalypse and believe in him to help him and his family get betrayed by Apocalypse. Perhaps Apocalypse could have killed his family. It would have made more sense for his change of heart at the end, because I did not understand why he was standing there charging up the steel bits around
whatever he was building.
Yeah.
Because it looks like Apocalypse had the main reactor and Magneto was just playing on the side in the sandpit. Like, I don't know exactly what he was doing, except sitting, standing there, floating there, looking cool.
Yeah.
You know, in the center of all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, true, they could have done a lot more with, like, his family and stuff. That, I think, was one of the most powerful moments, like, of the movie, like that, you know, when they do actually kill his family.
Of course, yeah.
Because, I mean, that was quite horrible the way it went down. The fact that he didn't fight back initially because he was trying to be good, I guess you can say. But, yeah, very... it was an opportunity that they could have done a lot more with, so... I don't know.
Yeah, it was really sad to see so much progress be wasted, because Magneto has come a long way. And at the end, when he says goodbye again, that was a really a wasted chance, because they got Mystique as the new teacher, which is a great idea.
Yeah.
And Magneto should have also stayed. It doesn't have to believe in Xavier's dream of peaceful coexistence, but at least as a counterpoint to Xavier. It would have been so interesting in the next movie to have Magneto on the side of the good guys.
Yeah.
And bring in another bad person, and not just somebody who joins up with Magneto, perhaps.
Yeah. True. I mean, that would be interesting to see a part of the different dynamic between the three of them. But at the same time, I'm getting a little bit tired of the three of them now. I think a lot of the movies have focused on Charles, Magneto, and Mystique.
And Mystique,
That's kind of like the holy trinity of the X-universe, right? Yeah. I think they need to shift gears a little bit, give us a story that just doesn't revolve around those three, because, you know, hearing Xavier's voice always saying, like, you know, come on, Eric, don't do this. This is getting a bit old, you know? I think it'll be great if they just focus on a different set of characters and, you know, have Magneto and Charles in the background, obviously doing their thing that they need to do to be, like, I guess, the elder figures of that world. But I think focusing on the students is probably a good way to move forward now and shift away from just that cycle of Magneto and Charles and Raven going round and round in circles. Oh, yeah.
And if they kept his daughter, it would have been great, because you would have had a figure in the new team that you're familiar with as a movie watcher, because I think she was his daughter in the comics. Is it Polaris?
It is. Yeah, Polaris. This is so he's got Scarlet Witch and Polaris, right?
But Scarlet Witch isn't his daughter anymore, I think.
Really? Yeah. Did they retcon that?
I think so, they retcon that.
Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, or just Scarlet Witch?
Yeah. I think both. Oh my god, I read the storyline, but I can't remember what's the reason behind. Oh shit. I should cut back on comics. So I can't
it's hard
everything.
To keep it all straight sometimes. okay. Interesting.
But
I know that they were trying to, like, you know, realign a little bit in the Marvel Comics world, just to sort of make it more in tune with the movies. So I can see that happening, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But it would have been great if Magneto would have gotten a better end. You know, keep his family around on the X campus and him.
You're almost like, you just like, give this guy a happier ending. You know?
Yeah. And not transport him back to Auschwitz and tell him, oh, you can sense all the metal in the world and blah. It was powerful, but frustrating, because we have seen this in every X-Men movie before.
Yeah. And that's what I wanted. I want to see something new. Like, I think at this point, if they're going to go comic book, if they're going to go with the full-scale comic book, go Dark Phoenix, bring the Shi'ar, and just take it so completely off the map from what's happening in, like, Superman. Because, like, you know, the DC movies are going to start going in that direction, right? Marvel's about to hit its Marvel Cosmic with the Infinity Gauntlet and stuff like that. So X-Men, take it to the next level.
Yeah.
Join everybody else in space. You know?
Yeah, get crazy with it. And you know, take the comics as a map, and then not as a... The comics aren't the Bible. Do something creative with the material and with the characters.
Yeah.
I wish they would be more brave in the storylines.
Take some, shift. Yeah, like I said, it'll be cool. I want to see the X-Men just working as a team rather than just having these students run around who don't know what they're doing, you know? And that's what I liked so much about Days of Future Past, is those future sequences with Blink and Iceman and Shadowcat and Bishop.
Yeah.
Working as a team, you know, with, it wasn't Pyro, it was Sunspot, right?
Sunspot, yeah.
And just, you know, they kind of knew what to do. They knew how to work with each other. Blink was just throwing, like, her portals everywhere, and they were, like, jumping through it because they were all so in sync with each other, and they knew, like a soccer team that plays really well. You know, they just knew how to do it. That's what I want to see more of. Yeah. You know, I don't want to see, like, Jean Grey not knowing what she's doing and Cyclops not knowing what he's doing, but they're in the fight. You know, that's not interesting to me. I want to see a good team playing well, but still getting beat down.
And you know what would have been great as a I mean, it wouldn't have fitted in this movie, but as a web series or something like that, just a little bit of background of Apocalypse in the past, in Egypt times, because that first sequence was great.
The way, him as a god, being,
the Kirby circuitry and stuff, yes, was great, and the plan that the people had to bring him down.
That was cool. Like
that
the
was awesome.
The way they brought down the pyramid and like that big massive block of stone that kind of went through and like knocked through all of the load bearing pillars and stuff. That was pretty cool.
That was an awesome sequence, and I would like to see more of that.
Yeah, that was one of the best parts of the movie, actually. Just that opening, it gave you a lot of hope for like where they were going to take it.
Yeah. And what's up with Oscar Isaac's character before he had the mind transfer?
Uh-huh.
Or body transfer, whatever. Because, you know, you could have done something really interesting, like, Apocalypse helps his family to get a new social status or something like that.
Oh, you know, you're thinking like ancient Egypt Game of Thrones with Apocalypse.
And, you know, don't make Apocalypse the solely bad guy. I mean, of course, he's a mutant fascist. You have to keep that element, but... let him be aware that he needs humans as slaves and as people he can pin mistakes on and keep them in his rank. Like you said it. X-Men Game of Thrones.
I can see that. It's like, how does Apocalypse choose who's going to be the next vessel, right?
Yeah.
And so I think at that point, and I don't know whether it was established, but he said effectively that he would pick, I don't know if they were specifically mutants, but he would pick humans at least, who had a power set that he wanted, right?
Yeah.
And so what did the rest of that pool of potential vessels look like to him? Maybe there were five of them and they needed to go through some sort of trials or something like that, right? Yeah. So it'll be a combination of the politics and the action sequences would be the trials that they needed to fight with each other or something fight to get to the who's going to be the one.
Yeah.
That would have been cool. I would watch that. Set in ancient Egypt, you'd have all those like awesome backdrops of the pyramids and like the massive costumes and the head things. You know, that would be cool.
It would have been awesome.
All right. That's an idea, I think.
We should do that. Just, you know, get the rights. And...
yeah, that'll be easy. Get the rights to X-Men from Fox. Even Marvel can't do that. Well,
just give it time.
Just send a note to Fox and say, hey, can you please do this? Do it as a Netflix series.
Pretty please. Do it as a Netflix series. Yeah. I'd rather die than give Netflix even more success.
Oh, dear. All right, cool. So, any final thoughts on like, the X-Men stuff? Because you got, like, a page of notes. So, did we go through all your notes?
Yeah. Great hair.
Great hair.
On,
for who?
On everybody.
On everyone.
On everyone.
Except Jean, right?
Yeah,
we need better hair on team.
Oh, and Nightcrawler, because his haircut looked like the one they give old ladies in the more remote sections of Austria.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Where, let's give him the grandma haircut from regional Austria.
he just had to have some red in there, and he would look like every modern grandma.
Yeah.
From the remote parts of Austria. and the
hipster
German
grandma. Bombing. Hipster grandma is what he
hipster
was going
grandma.
For. Really?
I mean, I liked him. I liked his portrayal. He was awesome. Just the haircut. The haircut took me out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, another thing I wrote down. Was it ever established that Havok died in the explosion of Cerebro?
We didn't see the body, but yes, they did say that he was closest to the blast. So when, when Quicksilver was rescuing everyone.
Yeah, he said he grabbed everybody.
But it was effectively too late for Havok. So by the time Quicksilver got there, Havok was already, like, I guess, atomized. So Quicksilver didn't even see him.
He was already MacGyver.
Yeah. He had ascended into MacGyver, yeah.
Because the haircut, when you watch the trailer and there's almost the same angle like the first shot of him from the trailer, just the outfit is different.
Yeah, well, he went from that was set in the 80s, right? So then he shows up like 30 years later in the 2000s or 2010s, whenever that show is set. And yep. he's, yeah, and now he's
the
MacGyver.
Second mutation is yeah. being a genius.
I remember a massive explosion, and then I had a pocket knife. So, yeah.
No, that was great.
Yeah, I think there was a cool scene in there as well, just speaking of Quicksilver, where Quicksilver's trying to fight Apocalypse, and Apocalypse sort of catches up to his yeah. speed. Like, he accelerates up. That was really cool. Cool, it was yeah. never explained what Apocalypse's power set was. So, again, going back to the mind control thing, which I think would have been such an easy solve, it would have been easy for them to just say, oh, and he's got mind control. Because we took for granted he could do everything else anyway.
Yeah.
So why not just give him mind control?
And the costume worked really well in the movie.
Apocalypse's costume?
I have to admit, yeah. He looked good. It
didn't look as bad as I thought it was going to look. Yeah. Like, he managed to pull, like, Oscar Isaac managed to actually pull off a lot of emotion. Well, not emotion, but he was able to act through the costume yeah. and the face yeah. makeup, which was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the final thing I'll yeah. say about the movie.
All right. Well, my final thing, or my favorite part, was the Weapon X.
Oh, yeah.
That was, I mean, yeah. we didn't talk about that. It was like, I don't know, 3 minutes of just awesome, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, the double standards set in that scene.
What do you mean?
It's very un-X-many-like to just let him loose on all those people. You know, Jean and Scott should have at least tried to contain...
True. So that was
the level of mayhem.
It was a bit like rewriting of history for like who was there when Wolverine breaks out of Weapon X, right? You're right. The fact that he goes full rage monster on them, it's almost like I would have loved to have seen Jean and Scott just go, okay, just let this guy do what he's doing as long as he doesn't touch us. Like, we don't want to get close to this. But yeah, because you're right. It's a bit weird that they just let him go like just fully crazy and just kill everyone, yeah. you know?
Perfect.
But you know that yeah, that was gonna happen anyway. It would have been cool if he just broke out by himself. Like the fact that they had to break him out, I think, because you're right, now makes them responsible for all the people that he kills. You know? So it was better. It would have been better if Jean just said, "Okay, something's about to happen. I don't know what. Everyone, just hide." Like it would have been better if that happened, but because they like literally unlock that door, right?
Yeah.
It'll be cool if he actually just slices his way out. But anyway, the way it happened. The fact that those were bad guys anyway, maybe makes it better.
But, yeah, to a certain degree, you know, I thought of the scene in the Michael Myers James Bond comedy.
Oh yeah. Where Austin Powers.
Austin Powers, thank yeah. you. Where the security guard dies and his family gets a notice.
Yes.
And I thought of all the notices that were handed out that moment that Stryker hit the button where at some print in the Pentagon the death certificates were
being sent out. That would be it's like a printer, for example, as Wolverine's killing people, you get another paper coming out of the printer, you know?
Yeah, it's like printing for 2 weeks because he goes through the whole base. Because
it was a bloodbath at the end of the day. Yeah. Like, that was pretty crazy. It was also weird, like one weird part was just the age difference at that stage between Hugh Jackman and Jean Grey.
Yes.
Like, it clearly looked a little bit awkward when she was all like, you know, touching his face or whatever to like open up his mind a bit. They should have de-aged him, I think, like the way they did with Robert Downey Jr. In what do you call it?
Civil War.
In Civil War, yeah. So they, you know, they could have very easily done that. Just to not make it look so awkward, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, it depends. If the very first X-Men movie from the end of the 90s, or yeah. from the early 2000s,
yeah.
Remains canonical, then it's really weird because he looked older in the past yeah. than he did in later in his life. But if they're gonna erase that, perhaps it will look a bit better when we watch the retrospective in a few years.
Yeah, but at the same, you know, maybe what they were going for then is maybe he wasn't looking older because he was kind of in captivity and sort of locked up in a box. Maybe yeah. he was just, you know, disheveled and ragged. Maybe that's what they were going yeah. for. So they can just pass it off as that. But once he gets out in the open, then he'll sort of regain his clean look that he had in the first X-Men movie.
The clean look.
You know, with his nicely manicured facial hair and stuff. So
first thing, my brother said when they let him out and he runs into the wood, he wanted to have Nightcrawler teleport for any reason into the woods and then back into the base just a few moments after Wolverine leaves and ask the guys, did anybody else see the guy peeing in the woods next to the tree? Or was it just me? You know, they get friends for that event.
That was a long wait he waited for that pee, you know.
Yeah. I held it in for 30 years. I'm the best at what I do.
Which goes back to an Austin Powers joke as well. Like, I think is it Austin Powers or Dr. Evil? But one of them, when they take them, they kind of freeze them. And then they're frozen for like, you know, a decade or so. And then when they take them out, he just goes for this long piss. And it's just there for like, you know, like 3 minutes or something, just fully going, you know. It's hilarious.
It would be great, Nightcrawler watching him. Being afraid to make a noise.
I needed to deliver a message, but it's a little bit uncomfortable right now. You know?
He just turns around and says, no shame between us, bud.
Just do what you gotta do, bub.
You're urinating on my feet? Yep, I'm the best at what I do.
Yeah, I think that would have taken the movie down a different angle, though.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
Yeah, so that was cool. I think just seeing that, the Weapon X, that costume with, like, all of the equipment on him was pretty fun.
I wish they would have gone full...
You didn't want him to have pants.
No, I wanted the pants, but I wanted the full helmet. You know, when the camera panned up, show me the helmet, and it's more like a headgear.
Yeah.
A very modern take, because it would have looked so ridiculous if he had this massive hand on his head with all the wires sticking into his body from there. It would have looked so crazy.
It would have looked, he would have looked like he was a member of Daft Punk, though. Like, that would have been like, you know, weapon Daft Punk is what Daft Punk. It would have been like really cool, like, techno music playing in the background, you know.
And saying stuff like, I'm up all night to get lucky. Slaying all those gods.
Yeah. Awesome. They play like, work it, make it, you know. That's, but they can play stronger as he's doing it. As he's getting stronger, yeah.
I guess somebody will make an edit of that. We mentioned it.
That's cool. All right, yeah. So overall, like, I think it was all right. I thought... It was great. It was great and entertaining, but in terms of like making me really making me understand why people were doing what they were doing, kind of fell flat for me there. Yeah. But it was great to watch. In terms of the action sequences, I still think like Days of Future Past has a lot of rewatchability because there's some great action set pieces in Days of Future Past, whereas this one didn't have all that many cool action. Like, there was a lot of effects. There was a lot of cities being destroyed. But you can't really rewatch that just over and over again. So that's why, to me, I like Days of Future Past better. Days of Future Past.
And it's strange because much of the effects I felt lacked a sense of weight to them.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I thought was solved since Marvel started Iron Man, because you couldn't. I mean, you see it now, but when I saw it in the cinema for the first time, I couldn't really distinguish the CGI from the. From the practical parts of the armor.
Right.
And for example, when Psylocke runs over the roof to jump onto the jet.
Yeah.
It feels like an animation is running, and I had the same feeling throughout the whole city, even with the bits that Magneto is letting float around him. Everything seemed so weightless.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, the look and feel of it was very much, like, animated. It was almost like you had real people in an animated world.
Yeah, like you said at the beginning, it felt like an episode of the cartoon.
Yeah. Which in itself, as a look and feel, like, if they're going to be consistent with that, then that's going to be kind of the brand of what sets X-Men apart. Just having these crazy exotic locations and being able to do, like, damage and stuff on that scale is fine. they just need to also make sure it just makes sense with that world. Because yeah. one of the cool things that Marvel has been doing is, you know, what's the repercussions for the rest of the world? Like, yeah. in the X-Men, this is mutants causing this much havoc and destroying, like, mass, you know, destroying cities and destroying the world, effectively. Because, like, Apocalypse is... when Apocalypse launches that last attack, it's against the whole world, right? So it's like you've yeah. got the whole world is being destroyed. What's the aftermath of that, you know? And what's going to be the repercussions and the fallout from that as we go into the next movie with the Dark Phoenix storyline? So yeah. what's the X-Men equivalent of the Sokovia Accords? You know, yeah. how's the world going to react? And the fear about that is either they ignore it and they just move on to the next storyline where, you know, all that death and destruction meant nothing. Or they deal with it in a way that brings Charles and Magneto back into fighting with each other and doing that whole thing where they go round and round in circles, you know? Because we've yeah. already done the Sentinels and stuff where we've had the kind of the non-mutant humans now trying to do something about the mutants. So what's the next version of that
what's
after
the next
this?
Step, yeah.
yeah. And I hope that they can sort of, again... deal with it in some way, so show what the repercussions are for the wider world, but also shift the focus to some other characters so that we can explore a different way of dealing with that topic.
With those problems, yeah.
yeah. Yeah. So anyway, let's see. I don't know. Is Bryan Singer coming back for the next one? I don't know. It was a bit uncertain.
I hope so, because, you know, I guess he needs only a few more people in his team.
Mm-hmm.
With more ideas, but I think his style it fits the X-Men, or it fits the franchise.
Yeah, I like his style and sort of where it's going to. I think from a visionary point of view, like, I'd like him to be a producer, but I think it's worth to have some fresh voices, like you said.
Yeah.
So he just needs to add some new people to his team. Whether that means that he just becomes a producer for the movies. And gives directing over to someone else who can bring a new perspective.
Me too.
That would be good. Because, like, Deadpool was set in that universe, right? But at yeah. the same time, Deadpool was so different and so fresh that it was... We all liked that part of it as well. That it wasn't just yeah. the same thing and revolving around the same characters. It's yeah. And that's what's good about, you know, shifting
really
the focus.
Something new to the table, yeah.
Yeah. So I'd like to see, like, a Deadpool movie with the budget that Age of Apocalypse had. That would be sweet.
That would be mayhem.
Can you imagine, though? And just having, like... And that's why it's cool to just have, like, the focus on one or two characters rather yep. than just, you know, trying to explain everything about everyone. And that's why you need tropes like mind control and, you know, shortcuts just to make things make sense.
Yeah, I don't know why people don't take advantage of the language of comic books more.
If you're gonna do a comic book movie, use the comic book tropes. You know, yeah, yeah, just get it out of the way so you can tell that story and yeah. make it make sense. Anyway, cool. So I think, yeah, not bad from my point of view, and I think from your point of view, like you said, very enjoyable.
Yeah, not as bad as I anticipated.
Yeah. So that's a final word. Not as bad as you think it is. All right. Cool, so that's Age of Apocalypse. So have you watched anything else then? So just, like, you know, quick movie review while we're on the movie subjects.
I know, I haven't watched any other movies since then.
Okay. So I did watch Independence Day Resurgence, like I said. I actually yep. watched that on the 4th of July weekend because, hey, you got to watch it on 4th of July weekend.
Yep.
You know, don't pay to watch it. If it's on TV, if it's streaming, yeah, watch it. But I wouldn't pay money again to watch it. It lacked a lot of the things that the original had, and the original wasn't. I mean, the original wasn't a perfect movie. Jeff Goldblum was cool, but the fact that Will Smith wasn't there was really missed. None of the new characters.
You mean not even in some?
No, there was a picture of him on a wall, but that was it.
I thought they would bring him in, you know, at some point in the movie as an advisor or something
like
that.
As a cameo. No, I think they said that. I think in the movie, from what I remember of what they said, is that he died.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. I thought that would have been, you know, the official story, and in reality he's working with some shadow organization. That is anticipating the aliens' return or something like that, and they would bring him into the movie.
No.
One of those.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad.
That didn't happen. So, and the thing is, he brought a lot of charisma and energy to the first movie, which was clearly lacked in the second movie because none of the new characters actually had any sort of charisma and fun to them. They were all kind of flat and bland, so you really didn't care, and they weren't bringing much to the table. Jeff Goldblum was the only one that was really enjoyed, and I can't remember the name of the actor who plays his father, but his father was really funny in the first movie as well. So he was in this one.
Yeah, great, he's back. Cool.
He was there, but he had like a random storyline. Like he was just in there doing stuff, but it wasn't connected to the overall story of what was going on.
Yeah, but that was that was his role in the first part as well. They shouldn't have given a story and just have him, have him banter.
Just
with
comic Jeff. Relief. Yeah. So that part was good. That part was good. Those are the best parts of the movie for me. The effects were good, like the animations, the way they did the CGI of the spaceships and the scenes in space and stuff were actually really good. So I quite enjoyed those. But the rest of it, I mean, like I said, if it's on TV and you gotta you could watch it, like if it's streaming or something. But I wouldn't pay to watch it. Like, watch it streaming if it's on Netflix. Like, if you've already paid for your streaming subscription.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, but if you have to pay extra to watch it, I don't know if it's worth it.
Is it a big spoiler if I ask about Brent Spiner's role?
It's not a spoiler, but he was actually good, too. Actually, yeah, he was quite central to the story of how they actually start overcoming and defeating the aliens. And his character was, one of the most charismatic and interesting ones in that movie.
Oh, nice.
All the younger cast were boring. Like Chris Hemsworth's brother, Liam Hemsworth, and Will Smith's character's son from the last movie was also in there.
Oh.
But they were just boring. And between those two guys, they were having some sort of like fight between them.
Yeah.
Over like something that had happened in the past, but you just didn't care about the interaction between those two and why they were fighting and stuff like that. So it's all very two-dimensional with that storyline. Brent Spiner was good. His character was fun and interesting, and I think actually he played kind of like a mad scientist role, so you would have enjoyed that.
Yeah, I loved him so much in the first movie, and it was so sad to see him go fast.
Yeah, because like it was uncertain because he was he died in the first movie, right?
So yeah.
they found
a
way to
his throat and fell over.
Yeah. And that's the last we saw of him. They find a way to bring him back. So you can, if anything else, just watch for that.
Yeah, I love the guy.
Yeah, he was cool, actually, yeah. I forgot about that specific part, but he was cool. And then the other one I watched was Warcraft.
Okay.
You know, when I think of
a Warcraft movie, I think of a Chinese person in a small dark room with a computer farming gold. And I watch him for 2 hours. I can't imagine a Warcraft movie.
What it was actually like. Just while we're on the topic of China, so in Independence Day, there was a lot of product placement for Chinese products, which made me laugh. So there was a Chinese character in there as well. So I think her name is Angel Baby or Angela Baby. She's like a famous singer actress in China. So she was in there as a kind of like your token Chinese character. So the movie gets big in China. But they also had the same thing that they did in some of the Transformers movie, where they had like a local Chinese milk brand. So like, like boxed milk. Yeah. And in Independence Day, there's a scene where they're on the moon because there's a lunar base. And they go to a vending machine and they buy moon milk, and it's the Chinese brand of milk. And I remember watching, like when you watch movies in China and that local Chinese brand shows up, everyone in the cinema just bursts out laughing because it's so weird to see like a Chinese milk brand in space in an American movie. So in America, nobody laughed because they just, it just kind of went, they just didn't.
Milk.
Yeah, they didn't realize, but they didn't pick up anything weird about it. But in China, it's like, hey, that's the milk brand we buy from 7-Eleven, and now it's in space in like Independence Day.
It's so strange that, I mean, China is obviously a big market, or the largest market for Hollywood.
Well,
it's so strange to see this
fast
shift.
I think they were saying like towards the end of the towards the end of last year or this year, the Chinese box office would have eclipsed the American box office. So I don't know whether that's officially happened yet. So America was still the number one box office market, right? But China was getting up there in terms of, like, even though they're only able to release like 24 movies a year or something that are American, it's still generating that much money from the Chinese market. So that's why they're... what you're going to see more of as they go forward is a lot of Chinese companies helping to finance American movies. Yeah. So because that means it's now no longer just a foreign movie, it's a partly Chinese movie. So it gets it gets into China as a part of a local movie
deal.
So it doesn't have to be one of the 24 that gets imported.
I think it was the same with Looper. That has been financed by Chinese benefactors.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we're starting to see more and more of that. So as we go forward, like even Iron Man 3 was partly Chinese, and that's why Transformers as well. So not the last Mark Wahlberg, may have been. The one, you know, it was in Hong Kong and China. There were a lot of pieces of the story that were set there. So, yeah, we're going to see more and more of that going forward, especially with these big blockbusters. But I don't know if Independence Day is opened in China yet. So in July, normally they have national holiday, so it's their kind of national holiday time as well. So they tend to show a lot of local domestic Chinese movies.
Yeah.
So maybe in the first weeks of August is when they sort of bring back more foreign movies. So
movies the other day.
We'll see how Independence Day does in China.
Yeah, and in China it's called Dependence Day. The one party.
Dependence Day, I love it. Oh, be careful. You don't want to have any Secret Service watching this.
They know I'm only joking.
You know I'm joking, right? Yeah.
And I'll throw out all the pillows tonight.
Yeah, board up your windows. Nah, I'm sure it's fine. Yeah, so that was cool. Warcraft was not as bad as you thought it was going to be. I was expecting really bad. It was great from a special effects point of view, seeing it. The story could have done with a bit of workshopping, you know, could have been improved. There was some good, there was a lot of potential. I'm not a Warcraft fan. I don't know the lore, but some of my friends who do know sort of more about Warcraft said they effectively tried to cram like 10 years worth of Warcraft lore into this one movie. And it kind of moves very fast. There was a lot of things that were happening which they just didn't explain, coming out of the way the game works and stuff. Like, you know, I think at one stage they use magic to turn someone into a goat or something, which is a specific, like, spell in Warcraft. So people who, like, know Warcraft would have known what that was, but they just didn't explain.
But all the other people.
Yeah, they didn't explain it to the general audience. But there was a lot of potential in the story. Like, they could have really done some really interesting things with the story, with the relationships between the characters. Like, there was a lot of family aspects to the story. Like, there was a father and son dynamic happening on the kind of, I want to say, the human side. And then on the orcs, like, the great motivation for the orc guy was about protecting his family as well. They could have really used that theme to tell some good stories to show how far you would go to protect your family.
Family, yeah.
But it just kind of got washed out and lost because they just needed to drive the plot forward so fast. It was great seeing magic, though, like just the wizards and stuff playing with like super, super visible magic with like streams of like energy flowing everywhere. It was really cool. Doctor Strange hopefully will have more of that. So I want to see that.
And it's sad to hear because I think Duncan Jones was the director on Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
I trust him to make a good Warcraft movie, even with bad base material.
Well, I don't think it was a base material point. I think it's about picking and choosing out of the base material what you're going to focus on, and then actually focusing on that. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with like we were saying about X-Men. There was just too much going on that they tried to cram into it, and a lot I think for fan service that you sacrifice having a good story and a good character arc for the story because there was again like I said there was a lot of potential to make a Warcraft movie where you really feel for the characters and even the orc characters, you know, you could have made those kind of monstrous looking characters very human and relatable in that sense but they wanted to do so much with where they wanted to take the story that they kind of sacrificed having a really good story arc, I think. So
that's so sad that the movie business doesn't take the time anymore to establish things, but to have to cram as much as possible into one narrative.
Yeah, but it's a problem with the medium as well. I think if you've got something like a Netflix series or a HBO series, you've got 10 hours to tell the story.
Yeah,
you know, so you can really delve into the characters and be able to go and, you know, explore those character arcs. Whereas if you're trying to do that and do the amazing action set pieces and take the story from, like, you know, three different climatic action set pieces, it's a lot to pull together. Which is why, like, you know, you watch these old movies from, or those classic movies from, like, even the 70s and 80s, which wasn't that long ago. And the pacing, like, you watch the first Alien movie now, the pacing is so different to the movies that we watch these days.
Yes.
And that's why the first Blade Runner as well, like, it's a slow movie, right?
Yeah.
Whereas now, people are going to get bored, you know.
It's a colleague of mine. I borrowed one of my Blade Runner Blu-rays. I gave him one of my Blade Runner Blu-rays, and he said he can't get through the movie. It's too boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's just talking. It's like, why are they talking? Someone go and fight someone. Give me a gunfight or something.
Yeah. He read the story, the summary on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And he's okay with that. He watches a few scenes. A few pictures he sees online, and that's it, because he can't get to the through the movie.
Yeah, and so that's where it fails as well. So it's a combination of, like, the interplay of giving audiences what they want, especially with where we are in movies now, which is all about just the action and driving that story forward, because people are going to get bored otherwise. Compared to being able to, you know, really take your time and tell that story. Because even with Game of Thrones, so the earlier seasons, because there was so much of story and so much of exposition that needed to be done, the earlier seasons tended to be quite slow. And there was a lot that you needed to just listen to what people were saying and, like, understand the histories of the families and all that sort of stuff. Whereas the latest season, because now they're off book, it's just moving along so fast that if it feels like it feels almost like a tonal shift with the show. Because the plot is now being driven forward so much faster. So it's an interesting one. So it's interesting, like, with a movie like Warcraft, you can't do a slow movie because potentially a lot of the fan and the demographic that you're going for wants to see a fast-paced movie, and they want to see those amazing action set pieces. You know, so you would either have to do, like, a three-hour Lord of the Rings style, you know, movie, which, again, you know, do people want to watch that either? So,
do people want to watch it with a franchise they don't know?
True,
that's a thing. Because Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, that gets people into the cinema. But Warcraft, you know, everybody, even my dad knows about Warcraft, but he doesn't know about the story or what's it about. He knows it's a game.
Well, that's the thing, and, like, a lot of people would be like, "Oh, I don't want to watch a guy playing doing gold farming for 3 hours."
And not as a documentary, but
yeah. It's like, but, you know, and again, I only went because it was Duncan Jones. I wanted to see how they were going to do it, and my expectations were super low, but I was pleasantly surprised. Like, I thought it was actually pretty watchable. I think it's better than Independence Day. It's worth a matinee. So,
okay.
Yeah. And again, if you get to watch it on, like, a good screen with, like, the effects can really pop.
I'll give it a try then, because the effects didn't look that good in the trailer.
It looks very animated, but yeah, I think they actually work really well.
Yeah, if you see the whole thing come together for more than a few seconds, perhaps it truly work out better.
Yeah, from a story point of view, the story was very interesting. Again, it does follow that Warcraft lore, right? So the story is actually quite interesting. There's a couple of twists and turns. So it's not boring in that sense. Like, I remember watching, like, Aragorn or something, and it was just such a pedant story. You know, it was just so templated and basic that you really didn't have anything to think about while you were watching the movie. Whereas with this one, I understood what it's like when I take my friends who are non-comic book fans to go watch an Avengers movie or something. Because I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea about the characters and the power sets and stuff like that. But, you know, that kept it interesting for me. I was trying to, like, okay, so hold on. How does that guy relate to this guy? And, like, okay, so these are the orcs, and what are their powers? And, like, how does their community work? Like, how, you know, the different factions and stuff like that. So, you know, there's enough to think about to keep the whole thing interesting as you go forward. So, all right, so that was my mini movie review. I don't think I've seen anything besides that. I'm just trying to think, like, even on Netflix or anything, if I've watched anything. But I can't remember anything else that's worth standing out. So just go through a quick trailer review next.
Let's do that.
So what are you looking forward to?
You know, how should I put it? I'd like to see more of Suicide Squad at this point, because I've talked to some people and they really shook my negativity towards that franchise.
They shook your negativity?
Yeah.
Does that mean they made you less negative or more negative?
Yeah, they made me less negative.
Right.
But, you know, there's nobody knows anything solid. We're all just fans, comic book readers who know each other through Twitter. I want to give the movie a more neutral approach. I'll try and be less biased.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think with Suicide Squad, you know, it's David Ayer, right? He's the he's the director. He's a very divisive director, but at the same time, I generally like a lot of David Ayer stuff. Also, though, they've had to do massive reshoots for Suicide Squad, they said, to fix up the tone after Batman Superman.
Yeah, but they said they'd fix up the tone, yeah.
So,
because I've read something about reshoots being something that's completely normal, but, you know, with all the journalism that is practiced today, reshoots become these great shake-ups of movies that they aren't.
Because it could mean anything. It could mean anything. Yeah. It could mean that they've decided to change something because it just wasn't working, or it could mean that the thing is so bad that they needed to do reshoots.
And can't go in there.
Comes because we don't know what they're reshooting in which parts. It could just be little bits of dialogue rather than...
Yeah.
Or, you know, they said we probably need more action or something like that. Like, we don't know, and I haven't read a lot of the press about it, so I'm not sure. I think Suicide Squad is going to be one of these things where it's a very Warner Brothers property, which is where you're going to have multiple people's points of view, you know, so almost made by committee. You know, they say a camel is a horse made by committee, where everyone wanted something different and then you ended up with the camel. So my expectation is that it's not going to be a pure David Ayer vision of what the movie is, but it's going to be a David Ayer-inspired Warner Brothers movie based on the results that came out of Batman v Superman.
Batman vs. Superman,
So it's going to be kind of a course correction, I think, based on where the DCEU was going, based on Batman and Superman and the feedback that it got. And the subject matter, I think, is so different. It's kind of like a spur. It's kind of like Deadpool. So I think it's going to stand on its own a little bit, and then Justice League is going to be different again with whatever they do with the Justice League movies. So it'll be interesting to see. My approach is going to be to just go in with an open mind and just see what they do, because it's just so crazy that it could be anything.
Yeah, and I think that's the way to approach this movie. Yeah.
So I saw a headline, and I don't know where it came. Like, I can't remember which newspaper or something it came from, but they effectively said that Suicide Squad is the emo Avengers go to Hot Topic. So, do you know Hot Topic?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Hot Topic is a it's kind of like a grungy, very 90s style store here in the US. It's a chain where, like, you know, you can buy, like, all those kind of goth grunge inspired clothing, like t-shirts with the, like, Slipknot band type t-shirts and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it will fit perfectly in the portfolio to have some Harlequin t-shirts and Deadpool dead shots.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they had to sell if they had to sell hot... my brain is dying right now. I need another coffee. If they had to sell Suicide Squad merchandise, Hot Topic would be the store it would be sold in. Like, it would fit right in. So, so yeah, that was that just made me laugh.
I think I read the same piece.
Yeah. So I can't remember where I read it. It was just a headline that I read. I didn't read the article. Do you remember what the article says?
That was basically your explanation of what Hot Topic is and how it relates to the franchise.
Yeah, I used to love Hot Topic. Like when I first made my first couple trips to the US, I used to visit Hot Topic because it was just a lot of comic book geek stuff in there as well.
Okay,
like Spider-Man. That's where I got my Superboy T-shirt.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Batman stuff as well. Like they actually have a lot of DC stuff. So I think it's a very it could actually be like a Warner Brothers owned shop for all I know. There's a lot of DC
perhaps
stuff.
It is.
Yeah.
A few corners.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right, cool. So that's Suicide Squad. Yeah. So just keep an open mind. See how that one turns out. What about Doctor Strange? We haven't heard anything much, right? But it's coming up soon. That's November.
Yeah, it's up in November.
Right.
And there should be something at Comic-Con.
Right, because I mean,
whatever they do,
we're close to a second trailer coming out. So maybe by around August, September, we should be getting a second or the next trailer. So, waiting for that. So that might be around. Well, I don't know. Like Marvel doesn't need to really wait for the Comic-Con. Timing these days, they can just do whatever they want because
they want.
Yeah,
but so, I guess it's because don't they do something with Guardians at the same Comic Con? I just read that James Gunn and whoever directs Doctor Strange had some Twitter exchange that they'll both be at.
Oh really?
Comic Con.
Okay.
Yeah. James Gunn didn't clarify if he would do a panel about Guardians or not.
Right, okay, because Guardians just wrapped up filming, right? So, they just wrapped that up, and Spider-Man Homecoming is kicking off. So they had like a passing of the torch between the two crews, which was fun. And I think, was it Thor Ragnarok as well? Is that I don't know if that's...
Yeah, they built the sets. I've seen some photos of the sets.
So that's starting filming now. I'm waiting for that. Like, that's going to be... Thor and Hulk is just going to be so cool together.
It's going to be awesome.
And then Hulk and the rest of, like, the demigods of Asgard, you know. It's going to be cool.
Beauty god.
Yeah, it's cool. All right, so Star Trek is coming out at the end of July, so the end of this month.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I like the Star Trek movies. I'm not a massive Trekkie or anything, but I like the world that they're building in there. It's going to be a sad one though, because like we had Leonard Nimoy passed away. So
yeah, and Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, that was shocking to me. Like I was like, that was just such a shock. He was a really good actor. Like, I remember seeing him in the movie Alpha Dog, which was a while ago now. But yeah, he just left such an imprint. He made such an impact to that performance that I was like, this dude's really good. You know, I think he's going to be someone to watch. And he did a good job as Chekhov as well, playing that role. So it was really, really tragic, I think, to have heard the news. So
yeah, it was a hard week. Because he died, and a few days later, Bud Spencer died.
Yeah.
And an Austrian cartoonist that I like died on the same day.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Cancer's crazy.
Cancer.
Or death is crazy.
Cancer is crazy, and death is also crazy. I heard somewhere, I think somebody tweeted, that it feels like 2016 is being written by George R.R. Martin, because everyone's just dying.
Dying, yeah.
Left but, right. I, like, you know, like, I was thinking about that. It's... Is it, it can't be, because that just wouldn't make sense, that there's an increase in the number of people dying, or the number of famous people dying. You know, that background of people dying is probably just the same rate, right?
Yeah.
It's just that we're probably now in the age where we kind of know a lot more people in terms of, like, entertainment and celebrities and, like, creators and stuff like that. So back in, like, 10 years ago, for example, we wouldn't have known who the people were who were passing away. You know, like you watch the when you watch the year in review specials that they have on New Year's Eve and they show you everyone who died, like half the time you don't know who those people are. But now, like, because we're in the prime demographic, I guess, and we've grown up with a lot of these people who are passing away, it's making more of an impact for us.
Yes.
You know? So, yeah, it's an interesting one. We're growing up, Martin.
Oh, God, we're old.
Crazy.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah. No, yeah. I feel like Peter Pan sometimes. I refuse to grow up.
Yeah, me too. But then the bills come in. And
like, oh, man, I got to pay bills. I didn't sign up for this.
When I call my dad and tell him, you should pay your bills. He tells me that they're mine now. Those are your burden now, son.
You wanted to be independent. Pay your own bills. Yeah.
Dependence Day. Pay your bills.
So that's going to make Star Trek a bit sad, I think, in terms of, like, it's going to be a bittersweet experience.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to Justin Lin's version of Star Trek. So
it would be interesting.
It's going to be Fast and the Furious set in space, is what I'm expecting.
Spaceships. Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
Andromeda Belt.
Because, like, just the trailer was just, again, so fresh. I really liked it. A lot of people didn't like it. A lot of, like, I guess, core Star Trek fans. So that's not Star Trek. But just playing, like, Beastie Boys and stuff in space is just, I think it's really cool. So I'm looking forward to the way they do that. The aliens and the story of those little drone ships cutting through the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Is awesome. I want to see more of that, and I want to see how that all comes together. So I'm really looking forward to Star Trek. So
yeah, it'll be interesting. With the reveal that Sulu will be shown with his life partner and the kid.
Really?
It caused a bit of a stir because George Takei said it's not really in the spirit of Star Trek. And I don't want to discuss if it's in the spirit of Star Trek or anything because it's 2016, have gay characters in the movie and show that they're openly gay. But, you know, with such a short time until the movie is going to be released, it feels like a marketing decision rather than... Or a quick marketing decision than, a marketing plan.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It felt odd.
It needs to be authentic if they're going to put it in. I don't want, you know, it's not good to put something in like that if it's just going to be for, let's just make a statement to draw some attention, because that's inauthentic, right? I think if it's a natural part of the story, if they do it in a very sort of authentic way, then it's going to be good. But if it's just thrown in there to say, hey, let's just be kind of provocative.
No, I think it'll be a natural part because they're on the 5-year mission. And, you know, if you have a scene where everybody is saying goodbye to the families and stuff, and then Sulu rocks up with his... the gay couple, the Sulus, rock up with the kid, and he says goodbye to them, it'll fit perfectly.
Yeah.
And that will be the statement in itself. But then I'm a white straight guy. it's okay that they announced it, but the whole discussion about it feels like such a calculated marketing stunt. It feels so cheap.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that if they just put it in the movie and didn't make a thing of it, that would have been more authentic than putting it in the movie and then telling everyone, hey, by the way, we're going to be like super advanced and progressive by having Sulu be gay, you know?
Yeah.
So, and especially, you know, that wasn't really established in previous movies either. Like, it's just, it feels kind of like, and I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't watch it that closely, but they've never really alluded to Sulu's...
they didn't, but...
family or anything, you know?
So. Yeah, but I don't think that's important. I don't think that's important. It fits the character because it somehow is a nice gesture towards... George Takei's legacy, I think, and how he's a galleon figure for the movement.
Yeah. So, but it's interesting. Then again, like I would like to understand then why George Takei is not on board with it. Like, what's his gripe? You know, because you're right. He's quite a prolific figurehead for the gay community.
Community, yeah.
And, you know, in terms of speaking out and, like, bringing that sort of visibility and awareness as well. So if he thinks that it's not quite not being done in the right way or doesn't fit in well, I'd like to understand why.
Yeah, me too. But then, you know, how hostile, everybody has an opinion.
True.
I don't remember the Larry Flint line. Something about...
Well, I remember the salt and pepper line.
Oh, yeah, you told me about the last time. There was something, opinions are like assholes, everybody has one.
Yeah,
something
exactly.
like that. Yeah. And I don't need to know his reasons. I'm just not, but then again, you know, I'm a straight guy. Who am I to judge the marketing department? It just, you know, the headline was on every news outlet that I frequent, and I thought, yeah, and I mean, it's 2016.
Yeah. So what, right?
Yeah, and none of my gay friends, of the two gay friends I have, called me up and said, oh, you know, you heard that about Sulu.
Sulu's gay, everything's better now.
We know in Star Trek, bow down before the supreme gays and something like that. Nothing like that. I make a mark. Perhaps we should cut that up.
That's fine. Happened. That was hilarious.
Nothing like that happened. Or at least in my small gay community window, there wasn't a sign reading Sulu's our property now or something like that. Or we own Star Trek now.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, having something strange like that, again, that's what I mean by kind of the authenticity as well. It shouldn't be, I don't know, like, I don't think it should be such a big statement. Like, you know, if they cast a Polynesian character, would they make a big deal to say, oh, and we've got a Polynesian character? If they cast a person who was disabled, if they only had, like, if they were wheelchair bound, would they make a statement to say, here's a press release, we've cast someone in a wheelchair? You know, or if they cast someone who is like a, you know, so why are you making this press release statement? You know, if it's just a part of what they're going to do, it's a part of the story. And if it's about normalizing, that type of relationship, then you know, it shouldn't be made such a big thing from a marketing point of view. Just put it in the movie and have people just see it in a normal setting, because it's not something to be remarked upon kind of thing, you know? Whereas now they've made it remarkable and they've put it on a pedestal somehow, you know, or they've pointed it out, they've shone a spotlight on it, so it's going to stand out.
As a fan, you know, sitting in the cinema and okay, let's go with the thing that we see his family in the sequence where they all say goodbye. Seeing this moment and you're having people applaud in the cinema to it.
Yeah.
Without going into the cinema and knowing that this will come up, would have been such a more powerful moment.
I think so.
We know of it.
So my favorite one, and I don't know, it's probably not been done so many times, but the one that I remember is from Frozen. So when I don't know the names of the characters, but when Anna, I do know the names of the characters because I've got a niece. When Anna is looking for Elsa and she goes and she stops at the little little shop that Sven is running.
Yes.
So Sven's got his husband or partner with their kids in the sauna, which they cut to really quickly. But they don't ever mention it, like, and there's no press release for it. It's just there, and people picked up on it. And they look, you know, this isn't a Disney movie, you know?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Like, that's the way it should have been done. It shouldn't have been made thing, you know? It should have just been put in there and just said, this is the thing that happens, you know? Deal with it.
It was the same when my nieces were made aware of that fact. They just said, well, isn't that nice that his family is with him there?
Yeah.
You know,
they're just being a family, you know?
Yeah, so it's awesome that he has his family in the sauna.
Yeah. So, anyway, so we'll see. I don't know. I didn't know about all this controversy over Sulu's family and stuff. So I'll read up on it a little bit just to see what George Takei's worried about.
Yeah, he said something about having talks with Gene Roddenberry about gay characters in the show, and Gene Roddenberry said something along the line of I'm already pushing the envelope. I don't wanna destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that George Takei is with him on
right
on that opinion.
So George Takei is with Gene Roddenberry in terms of Gene Roddenberry's vision for what Star Trek.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I would say, on that point then, I would say that, you know, Gene Roddenberry probably said that in the 80s or the 70s.
Yeah, so they made Star Trek, and it's 2016, you know? We should push the envelope
until
it blows up.
The envelope's pushed much further than that now. So Star Trek actually looks a little bit backward if it doesn't catch up, especially because it's supposed to be set in the 23rd century or something, right? Yeah. So they should be pushing the envelope further than where it is now, right?
Yeah.
If they want to portray a future, or you know, a idealized version of the future as Star Trek generally is, just for where humanity is at, then they need to be pushing more of those types of agendas. I think agenda. I don't like that word.
No, it's but yeah. It's just it's 2016 and humanity has reached a point where everybody can feel comfortable in their skins.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, you know, should that mean that we should be having transgender people on the Starship Enterprise?
Absolutely.
That's what I mean, but I don't want to say the word agenda to make it sound, because, you know... A lot of conservative people call the gay agenda, which feels like there's some sort of master plan. You know, there's a whole bunch of people in a dark room somewhere plotting this master plan for the gay agenda. It's just hilarious.
The problem is there is a master plan. It's called development.
Human progression, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and that's the master plan. You know, you can't hide from it.
It's more of a snowflake going out in different directions rather than a specific direction, though. Anyway, it's the evolution of human culture. All right, that went kind of sideways in terms of topic. That was Star Trek. There hasn't been any major news on Rogue One and stuff, I think, in the last couple weeks.
No, nothing much except that Forrest Whitaker is playing a character from the Clone Wars whose name escapes me at the moment.
That's in the TV section. I finished Star Wars Rebels Season 2.
Yes!
Oh, I was so impressed. Such a great... It was done so well.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And there was an article, I think they... there was an interview with one of the Star Wars creatives, and they said that, it's pretty much canon. So what's happening in the Star Wars Rebels universe is like canon, what will happen in the rest of the world as well. And yeah, that's just so cool. Like the whole thing with like the Jedi and the Sith and how that all comes together. And I was very impressed with the way it was done.
Yeah, so great.
Yeah. It's a great show.
I have goosebumps, you know, just thinking about it.
Yeah. And I got a Sith temple. Somebody gave me a Sith temple with the book and stuff for Christmas one year.
Oh my God.
I don't have it with me. It's in Sydney. But I didn't know what it was because I wasn't like into the whole Star Wars. Like, I didn't read the books and stuff. And the movies had never shown the temple before. So seeing it now in the way Star Wars Rebels showed it, just really cool. Like, to see how it all works and what it was. And then, like, the fact that there's that Sith Lord walking around, but they don't know who it is. And that was the way it all came together was really cool.
It's awesome.
Definitely worth watching that show. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were some great, like, just one-shot stories as well. Like, I can't remember the character's name now. The one from, the one with the staff. Anyway, there were some great stories with, like, finding the homeworld for, like, some of these,
Zeb.
Zeb, that's right, yeah. The alien race for, like, Zeb's people and stuff. Yeah, there were some good one-shot stories as well as the overall arc with, where Kanan and Ezra were going with being the Jedi. Yeah. And the ending. Ooh. Goosebumps.
Oh, my God. Kanan, you know, I usually don't cry when I consume media. I'm a very cold person when it comes to that. But when he steps out of the ship with with the bandage on a certain body part.
Yes.
You know, I just had to shed a tear. Oh my God, because everybody sees that Ezra has changed, and
yeah.
Kanan, that moment when he turns around in the when the camera is panning through
yes.
through the ghost
and the back and of his turns, head, yeah.
Oh God, and he turns around and you think, oh God, he can feel what is happening.
Yeah.
with Ezra.
And that's going to be next season's going to be so interesting with that path. Like I don't,
yes.
yeah.
Oh, I can't wait for it.
Give it to me now.
Oh my God.
Yeah. No, that was done really well.
So great.
And Ahsoka as well. So, yeah.
Oh my God. Yes. Oh my God. So great that they brought her back. They did so much for her. Oh God. Yeah. Vader.
It wasn't. Yeah. She wasn't just like brought back as a token character. Like it
no,
was great
no,
to see her.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Great to see her and the way they played it out, the way they played out Vader as well. Like you said.
Yes. God,
and that
yes.
scene where Ezra's in the Sith temple and Vader shows up on the platform that's just kind of lowering, and it's that such an iconic view with him. The cape is like kind of like blowing in the wind, and he's coming down with his red lightsaber. Like, yeah, really cool.
Yeah, and the line, "Oh God, I'm not afraid of you," and yeah, then you'll die.
Yeah.
Then you'll die without fear or something. Oh, yeah. God, yes, Vader! He's great again. You know, you can finally forgive the whole prequel thing.
Yes.
When watching him in that role with the Ralph McQuarrie design, where he's very, very angular, very angry looking
yes.
all the time.
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. it was done. Yeah, it was worth you pushing me to start watching it, because once I started, I just finished it. Like, it was really cool. Yeah. Definitely worth checking out if you haven't watched it. That was only like a couple of weeks ago too, so I was I'm just fresh off that boat.
You were on the road, man.
So what about the new Voltron? So you've been watching that, or you've watched that?
Yeah, yes. I didn't even know it came out. I just got up and I checked my emails, and Netflix said, "Hi, Martin. The new Voltron series is up.
You may be interested in this."
Yeah, and I've ended up watching the whole series for an extended breakfast.
Right. Okay. So you sat down for breakfast and you just sat there, is what you're saying.
So my lunch was a second serving of breakfast.
It's like, hey, I'm hungry again. Yeah.
It's a great series. It really embraces the tropes of the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, with the whole having to go through the whole tunnels and elevators just to reach the hangars, instead of just, you know, having the hangar somewhere near the central station. And the characters were great. I don't have a gripe with any of the figures. The main villain gets not enough screen time, I think.
Okay.
But I guess there's an interesting story behind him, because he is linked to the Voltron alliance, so to say. It's not just I have to get that weapon. He has a history.
All right. So he's actually Voltron.
And the dynamic, the humor, the animation, it works, and it's not just a monster of the week thing. You have only two giant monsters. How are they called? Biomex or something
okay.
like that?
I've only watched random episodes of Voltron from the late 90s, because there was a reboot in the late 90s as well.
Yeah.
So I haven't watched the original Voltron, because I was watching the Macross Robotech stuff when I was a kid.
Okay.
So yeah.
But I've only seen the first two original Lion Voltron episodes as well, but I've seen a lot of the vehicle Voltron stuff.
Right. Okay.
And I want him to bring that back, because there would be 15 vehicles characters. It would be awesome to make a story about that now. But it's a really great it's a great show.
Okay.
The problem is it ends very abruptly.
Right.
So perhaps waiting for the second season to watch the whole first season would be a good thing. But I really enjoyed the show. I like the storytelling. I like the stories themselves.
Yeah.
Because you can watch it as a Saturday morning cartoon, or you can watch it in one sitting. It interlocks very well.
Right. And there's, like you said, it's like there is one major arc. It's not just a bad guy of the day type thing.
No. There are
two bad guys.
Yeah.
That's what you said. And two monsters, actually, is what you said.
Yeah,
and,
two.
But it ends on a cliffhanger, you said, so it's unsatisfying as an ending.
It's a massive cliffhanger. You have the final battle, which is awesome because they really took their cues from 80s animation. It's done by the same team that did Legend of Korra.
Oh, right,
so
okay.
So you're getting your Netflix subscriptions worth of content, and they have all this 80s explosion, you know, where you have this small, and then the whole thing blows up afterwards.
Yeah, the double boom.
Boom, yeah.
The mini boom and the big boom, yeah.
It looks so great. It was a very enjoyable Monday.
All right, cool. So. All right, I'll check it out, because I don't have a cartoon. I don't have an animated thing that I'm watching right now. I'll give it a try.
Yeah,
although, if it's going to be an unsatisfying ending, then yeah, that's going to...
Well, not unsatisfying, but I thought it would have 13 episodes.
Right.
And I thought, yeah, well, that's the end of episode 11. Nothing will happen. And then instead of the watch the next episode screen, the recommendation came up on Netflix.
Ah, you might also enjoy, yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. That can't be the end. Come on.
I gave up my Monday for this.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so I mean, I generally don't like when that happens, but I mean, if the journey to get there at least has some resolution, then it's okay.
Yeah, it sets up, it sets up the team building very well, because you can see this last conflict as the master study,
right?
In how to work as a team,
right? So that's them. So it's effectively them coming together as a team.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, they work pretty well beforehand, but
yeah.
That's like in Days of Future Past. That's the scene you have at the beginning of Days of Future Past,
right? Okay,
where they all really work together,
yeah,
and get the acts together,
yeah, just perfectly in sync kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right, I'll check it out and I'll let you know next time what my thought is.
I'm really looking forward to you.
Yeah, well, especially since I'm not a massive Voltron fan, so I don't know all of the background and the lore, right? So it'll be interesting to see if there's anything that I'm like confused about as I watch it.
They explain everything.
All right, they go back to first principles and
yeah.
All right, cool. I'll let you know. Speaking of things that end on a cliffhanger, I watched. It's on Netflix as well. Is an anime called Ajin, AJIN. I don't know if you've seen that one.
I think I have it on my list.
It's worth watching. But it also doesn't end, like, it's not, it ends kind of on a cliffhanger, but it's a satisfactory, like, they actually finish off a story arc, and then the story keeps going, so
yeah.
They just leave it kind of before the next major thing happens. But it's a very interesting show. The lead character is kind of, it's not even an anti-hero, he's a very different type of archetype of character because he lacks any empathy. So he does things sometimes that are purely logical, and you're like, that's not a good thing to do. Like, you can't be a hero, you know? How can you do that, you know? But what's great about it, so the premise is that there are these beings called Ajin who can't die. They're effectively immortals.
Yeah.
And in Japan, there's only two of them that are known kind of thing to the public, but as soon as one gets identified, the governments want them effectively. And this kid, like, so the first episode is they set up a lot of the background that these Ajins exist, and they're learning about them in school and how they're not, you know, they get classed as not human, so they get classed as a different species and stuff like that. And then this kid ends up being one, and so it's, you just follow him and his journey as now he's like on the run because the government's after him. There's like private organizations after him. Who can he trust? Because there's a bounty on his head. And then there's also, like, as the story builds, there's a resistance movement as well. It's done really well because there's some bits in there about how do you capture and deal with a person who can't die?
Yeah.
And then, so what, the other cool thing is, like, you find out every time they do die, they get regenerated to being full health. So they effectively, their body respawns in place with full health, right? So it's preferable for them to die if they're in a fight, because then they come back with full health. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if they get injured, the injury is, they keep the injury until they die. They and then, so for example, in a fight, if they get a broken arm, for the rest of the fight, while they're alive, they've got a broken arm. But if they die, the arm heals itself and they come back full health. So with the teams of people who are trying to capture them, they've got ways for how to keep these people from dying and coming back full health. It's really interesting. Like, there's some, the logistics of how they do some of these things is what makes the show really cool. And it's really creepy as well. Like, it's quite dark. And they, you know, trigger warning for like experimentation on humans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it does get quite dark, but, it's not gory in that sense. It's not like, you know, there's not like blood flying everywhere, like, you know, stuff like that. And they also have, and so, you know, there's some other things that I won't give away, but definitely worth watching.
Okay, I think it sounds interesting.
And it's only like, I think it's only about 10 or 11 episodes as well. So it's definitely watchable. Yeah, in a quick way, definitely worth checking out.
Okay, I've wrote it down. I will check it out. Is it on Netflix, you said?
It's on Netflix, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's definitely on Netflix in America, so you should get it as well. I'm not sure. Yeah. So aside from that, the only other thing I've been watching currently is, well, we had the Game of Thrones final, which was epic, but I'll save that for...
Yeah, I've read about that.
It's pretty epic. I've been watching season 3, I think we're at now, of The 100, which is my Game of Thrones off-season show. It's a roller coaster ride of emotions as well.
The 100? Is that with the... with a rather younger cast of characters?
Yeah, it's a CW show, so it does have a younger cast of characters, all very good looking. But it's a... It's like a post-apocalyptic thing where the sort of the human race is set between like these different tribes. The world has been ravaged by nuclear war, and like these are people who are picking up. But it's kind of like there's kind of future tech, but it's very primitive as well, because you've got like local tribes and they have to fight over territory and stuff like that.
Okay.
And there's a lot of politics between the different tribes and factions, and the show is not shy of going and doing things that just blow your mind sometimes. It takes about 4 or 5 episodes to get into it. The first season, yeah, like the first 4 or 5 episodes are kind of slow and feels very kind of teenage-y. There's a lot of angst going on. But what's great about the show is that almost every 4 episodes... something happens that completely changes the dynamic of the show. So okay, you almost, if you don't like what's going on, you almost don't have to wait for too long before everything's going to change anyway. So,
yeah, because you have 3 episodes in the worst case.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool, like the way the show's done. Unlike Game of Thrones, there's not an overarching kind of like the White Walkers are coming. Like, you know, yeah, there's not a final... battle that it's building towards. It's more of a roller coaster ride. Like every season goes through an arc, which is great. And then within that one arc, the dynamics of the show change several times. Like in terms of, because you end up liking some characters and disliking others, but then because the situations are so extreme, because everyone's fighting for their survival, you can kind of understand why people are making the decisions that they're making. And like part of the premise of the show is there are no good guys, because everyone's doing things just to survive. And sometimes the things they have to do will take them to the edge and they'll cross lines that you'll be like, oh, I'm not sure about that. You know,
yeah.
Really cool. Really interesting. Really interesting show. Like, it's a fun show to watch.
Okay. The 100.
Yeah. It does get my endorsement. It's really cool. So that's pretty much it for now. Like, I haven't been watching anything else. That takes up enough of my time, let me tell you.
Yeah, that's the problem. You have work and everything on the side.
Yeah.
It's not like we can have fun all the time.
Oh, can't we? Jeez. All right. should we move on to comics?
Let's move on.
All right. So what have you been reading? DC Rebirth. What's your take?
I'm not sure. It's essentially saying, yes, people, we know we fucked up with the new 52. We're trying to make everything better by incorporating Watchmen into the DC universe.
Yeah. And well, it's a course correction, right? It's a course correction on the new 52, and they're folded in the Watchmen universe with now what the DC universe is. And is it working out? Do you like what they're doing with that?
It's on the back burner, the whole Watchmen thing.
Right.
What I like about it is that they brought the classic Superman back, so to say. So the new 52 Superman died.
All right.
And this version of Superman, or this version, classic Superman has a kid now who's also super powered.
Right.
And Lois Lane she's an author, and she writes critical books that expose the criminal machinations of organizations and stuff, and comes into conflict with Intergang because of that.
Wow, she's like Mario Puzo. She's like the Metropolis version of the Godfather is what she's writing.
Yeah, and it's well made. And I really like what they did with Aquaman in the last issue, because it basically ends superhero. If it has a wider range, it would have ended superhero comics as we know them.
Oh, really? You mean just the storyline in the Aquaman series?
Just a moment, because he offers Black Manta the chance to kill him. And Black Manta declines.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He opens a center for how should I put it? Human and Atlantean relations.
Yeah.
And they have this big opening party, and Black Manta plants a bomb there.
Right.
And sets it off. And of course Aquaman goes and fights him, and at some point in the fight Aquaman says, "You know, this is ridiculous. We're doing this every time. Here, take my spear, and if you'd like it, kill me.
Just end it now, Manta.
End it now. But it won't give you any satisfaction."
Yeah.
Because, you know, yeah, and he drops the spear, drops to his knees, and yeah, and I thought, hey, that's just a great moment. You know, you've ended Aquaman.
Yeah. Oh,
right,
interesting.
Right there and then. and superhero comics to a certain extent.
Yeah, well, if you take out, yeah, depending on who you take out, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It was a great moment, and I'm looking forward to where it goes from there.
Okay.
And that's a great thing about Rebirth. Those two things. Those are the only things I'm following, because Batman, the first issue was great. Second issue wasn't that great.
Right. Okay.
And that's all I'm reading, except when Blue Beetle comes out and Dr. Fate. I'll be checking those out too.
Yeah, Blue Beetle should be cool. He's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, Ted Kord is back.
Yeah.
He's back from the dead.
Nice.
He's been reborn.
Yeah, it was interesting with the whole DC Rebirth thing. Is this the same timing that Marvel announced the Captain America being Hydra?
Yeah.
They kind of stole some of DC's thunder by that, you know? Took over the Twitter sphere and stuff. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, DC is just rebooting their stuff all the time these days. It's like, you know, just give us a consistent story that we can follow. But yeah. I guess that's their thing anyway. It's just, it's all like happening in pocket universes, and you never know.
The problem is we don't have the numbers, because DC could really set itself aside from Marvel by making progress through actual stories instead of events.
Yeah, true, right? Because that's, they're just relying on events to kind of relaunch these things all the time. But if they told some good stories, like classic stories, or stories that would become classic, that would be
classics,
great. You know, give us something to sort of look forward to in that point of view, not just rebooting all these characters all the time. I don't know if you can hear that, but there's like the tourist boat downstairs is kind of
Oh, yeah. Now I can hear it.
Putting out an announcement. So anyway, hopefully that stops soon. Let's see how it goes. Yeah, so I haven't... two things that I've been looking at was the Captain America being Hydra. That's an interesting thing to see how that ends up with the story and how they explain it. It feels a little bit like more of a marketing shtick than anything else. Like, I don't know.
Have you read the second issue of Captain America, Steve Rogers?
No.
You get the explanation there.
Oh, really? Already? Yeah. Okay, so I need to read the explanation. Is it satisfying?
Yes, it's the thing that I anticipated.
Right.
With a twist on it, because I didn't read Standoff, that prison storyline with the Cosmic Cube girl.
Right. Okay.
I haven't read that one. It's, yeah. If you... We both talk comic book, and we talked about mind control earlier.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
So...
I mean, it's a bit more... There's more to it than mind control.
There's more to it than that. Okay. All right, cool. So I'll have to look that up. So we won't spoil that one yet. Let's just...
No.
I think it's too recent, because that was only in the last couple weeks, or the last week or so, right? That would have come.
Last week, yeah. So, the last 2 weeks.
I haven't checked it out yet. And the other one was that I really enjoyed was Spider-Man Deadpool number 6, where they go through the studios making fun of all the movies.
Yeah, and...
and they had the... What do they make? They call the Batman Superman one the yawn of boredom.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool. Great commentary.
I've seen the screen grab from that one.
Yeah, so it's so Deadpool. It's worth checking out. Oh dear. All right, cool. Anything else from a comic point of view that you're looking at?
Yeah, the Flintstones comic.
Really?
Was awesome. Yes. I read it yesterday.
Massive action set pieces? Like...
No, but... You know, when the whole thing was announced, I thought it would go nowhere. But then I've read Future Quest and all the things that came out, and they were already great.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, well, they're going to trip up at the Flintstones. And they didn't. And it's such... It's a story about evolution.
Oh, right.
To a certain degree, and how violence fuels evolution and
oh,
technology.
Wow. Seriously? The Flintstones went there?
Yes, and at the same time, it's all too human, because there's a scene where Wilma paints in her free time, and she gets an exhibition.
Right.
And she does cave paintings of her handprint.
Oh, wow.
And then she explains the meaning of the handprint. And it is such a human thing that we do every day. We do it right now. It's just us proclaiming that we're here.
Yeah. You know,
we were here.
That's why we take Instagram photos, you know?
Yeah. It's I've read this thing, and Susie was in the room with me, and I told her, read the Flintstones comic. It's amazing.
Wow. That's like that's like an anthropological commentary. That goes pretty deep.
It's awesome. It's
great.
And if the series is cancelled at this point, it was the perfect issue.
How many issues have they had?
It's the first one.
Oh, really?
It was the first issue, yeah. It was already great. I'm aboard.
Wow, that's...
If they keep up that
that's worth checking
level
out
of storytelling.
Yeah.
It's great.
Wow, all right, cool. I'll have a look at that. I'm actually going to drop by the comic store this afternoon on my way back from... We're going to go out for lunch, so I'll look for Flintstones.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Nice. All right, cool. Look forward to that. Yeah, awesome. I'm going to add that to my pull list.
Did you watch The Jetsons?
The cartoon I watched, when I was a kid.
Yeah, then there's a comic book out that's called The Joiners.
The Joiners. Okay.
The Joiners. And it's basically, it's the Jetsons. But if, what was the dad's name?
George
Jetson
yeah.
was Steve Jobs.
Seriously?
It's great. It's amazing.
All right. All right, cool. That sounds interesting. Yeah. The Joiners, it's called.
The Joiners,
so
yeah.
Who's doing these? Are these variant or like which comic?
No, no. The Joiners is from Boom Comics.
Boom, right.
It has nothing to do with the Jetsons, but as you've read it, you know, you see all these little hints because it's George Joiner.
Right.
All right. So it's his daughter. Yeah. And the robotic maid.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
It's great.
Are there Apple logos everywhere?
No, but a lot of future tech.
Yeah. Oh, nice. All right, cool.
Yeah, it's a great comic.
Cool. I'll keep an eye out for that and Flintstones. So it's interesting. They're both like, you know, those old Hanna-Barbera style things.
Yeah.
From, I don't know, it's like the 80s?
The 80s, yeah.
70s, 80s.
In case of the Flintstones, the 70s, yeah. Even earlier.
So... Yeah, it's that whole nostalgia thing coming back and like being repurposed for 2016, I guess.
But in these cases, it works really great. The same with Future Quest. You know, we know the vocabulary of the characters, mm-hmm. of the franchises, and then seeing it repurposed.
Yeah,
is such a great thing. Thoughtfully repurposed, yeah. Not just being thrown together.
Not just randomly. Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully we get more of that, because there's a lot of stuff just being thrown together as well. So
yeah, there was this like, interview. I think Jeff Parker is writing Future Quest, and in an interview he said that there are these blob things in the Herculoids.
Mm-hmm.
And he was thinking about, because I think they share, I didn't watch so much of the Herculoids, but they share consciousness.
Right, the blobs do.
And one of those is bonding with the big bad.
Right, okay.
Which gets blown up. So what happens to that part of the consciousness? And seeing that in the comic book after hearing the interview.
Yeah.
You know, they're really overthinking that,
wow.
those things to a certain degree. But when you see them executed, it's really interesting.
Well, that's what's cool as well, is that they can explain that in the comic book, right?
Yeah.
They can actually show you how it all fits together and
fits
works
together,
out.
Yeah.
And that's part of what it's about. It's about building that world and making it make sense. You know,
yeah.
Not just throwing a silly idea out there and just saying, "Oh, take it on faith. It works.
It'll work."
Yeah. All right. Cool. Awesome. That was a couple of good recommendations this time around.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I think we've got to the end of our agenda for our agenda, which we sat down and plotted out in the dark room.
In our breaks between gold farming.
Yes.
For our online life.
Yeah, for sure. So that was great for episode 5. Episode 6, we need to think about, we need to make sure we plan that one out so we don't let it run out too far. But yeah. Hopefully we can do it within the next 4 weeks. So.
Yeah, I'm on vacation.
What, for the next 4 weeks?
No, in 3 weeks.
Oh, all right, okay.
For a month.
Oh, really? Awesome.
Yes.
Cool. So yeah, so we'll definitely set something up. I'll keep a free weekend and stuff, and then we can plan that one. But yeah, that was episode 5. It's a wrap.
It's a wrap. And we filled it with delicious goods.
Did we?
In my opinion.
And we came in just under 2 hours. That's good.
That's great.
We're doing slightly better with timekeeping.
we're getting a feel for it.
Yeah. No, it was cool. I thought it went well. So aside from this, I don't know where that noise came from.
That was an abrupt end, but then it gives you an excuse to return next time and discover the nature of the mystery sound Niff encountered. In the meantime, you can contact us at asteroidsinexile@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, have a great time. Until the next time, you'll hear from us.